Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international location and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the cuisine and culture of a place. Today, I'm happy to welcome Kim Kushner, author of The New Kosher, Simple Recipes to Savor and Share. So hello, Kim. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Kim, I was doing a little, research on you, and I think that you have a really interesting kind of family story, like a back history. So I wanted to start there and talking about your upbringing and how that kind of informs the work you do today.
Absolutely. Well, I was born and raised in Montreal, Canada, and my father is Canadian, and my mom was born in Morocco, and when she was very young, moved to Israel and grew up in Israel and later moved to Canada. So I really had a mix of cultures in our household when we were growing up.
And now you are a food, a cooking instructor, a cookbook writer. How did that kind of help form what you do today?
Well, growing up, I'll tell you that my house and my mother's life, and it continues to this day, really does revolve around food. It was always about food and inviting people over and hosting dinner parties and brunches and whatnot. And it was the first question in the morning was, what do you want to eat? The last thing before bed was, what do you want for breakfast tomorrow? So there was food around us, and it was so much more than about the food itself. It was really about the idea of sharing and, feeding the soul and feeding each other and being together as a family. And years later, I moved to New York, and I found myself repeating the same things and really creating relationships and friendships that revolved around food as well.
And now we are here with The New Kosher, your newest book. And you talk about your decision to keep kosher in your life. And so maybe we can start there with just making sure we define what kosher is.
Okay. So kosher is basically a set of Jewish dietary laws. And there are different explanations, but just to name a few, I'll say that we don't eat pork, we don't eat shellfish, or the laws require that you don't. So, of course, not everybody follows it, but I don't, I should say. I don't mix meat and milk together in a dish, so I wouldn't be able to saute a steak in butter or, make a cream sauce for my chicken. It's a very separate, clean sort of eating.
Okay, and those are like the historic laws, which we understand. So what is your book, The New Kosher?
So, I feel like I've always been kosher. So for me, this isn't something new. It's just the way that I've always been. But I do feel that there's been a real reputation, and maybe not such a great positive reputation, for what kosher food represents. And I've always cooked, and I've always used just regular non-kosher cookbooks to be inspired and to come up with great recipes and follow recipes and whatnot. And I just was trying to, over the years in my cooking classes, was show people that just because you're kosher, you don't have to think of yourself as completely restricted, that you can still cook seasonal and beautiful and fresh dishes using kosher ingredients and following those kosher guidelines without sacrificing that much at all. And, I have so many friends who are not kosher, who are not Jewish, who come over, and the way this idea came to be is that I would feed these people and they would be like, this is not what I thought kosher food tastes like. And my reasoning was, it doesn't have to be so different.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of those inspirations, the cookbooks you mentioned, but also thinking of the kosher dietary guidelines as not thinking about them as restrictions. So how do the kosher guidelines both challenge you and inspire you in your cooking?
Well, so I think it becomes a challenge most when it comes to desserts for me, because if I'm serving a meal that, you know, if I'm serving steak or chicken for dinner, I can't afterwards serve a dessert that has butter or dairy product in it. And I think it's hardest actually when it comes to baking to try to substitute butter and cream for other things. And that's where it became challenging a little bit. But over the years, there have been so many great replacements and there's so many new ingredients out there that don't make such a big difference after all. You know, I bake a lot using coconut oil. And, you know, growing up, there was margarine everywhere in my house. But, you know, these days, I think that we know better, so we do better. So my cookbook doesn't use margarine in it at all, not in the baking, not in the cooking. So I just think there are great replacements these days.
That's absolutely true. I think more now than ever. So let's start with the first chapter of your book, Kim's Essentials. Can you tell me about what some of those are and why?
Sure. So the first chapter was really an idea that was to put my go-to recipes, the recipes that I make time after time, week after week, that my friends, my neighbors come over, and I always have, you know, pita chips with za'atar in a big jar on the counter, and I always have a quick hummus recipe in the fridge ready to go. These are the recipes that I turn to time and time again. They're simple, straightforward. One of them is butternut squash chips with herbs de Provence. This is something I make every week. Everybody loves them and goes crazy over them. I make some pickled carrots and radishes. And there's just a bunch of really easy, the whole cookbook is really tried and true recipes, but these are the ones that I make over and over and over again.
And I picked up on, while I was looking through the book and cooking from the book, many influences from different cuisines. You have Middle Eastern influences, you have French influences, like you just mentioned, you have Asian influences. So maybe you can talk a little bit how kosher, I think you're trying to break down these, you know, ideas of what kosher is, like this one very kind of stagnant cuisine, but really you're starting to bring in all these other flavors and inspirations. So maybe you could talk a little bit about how that process works for you.
Sure. Well, I think what happened somewhere along the lines is that kosher cooking sort of got mixed up with Jewish cooking. Mm. And to most people, what Jewish cooking is, are those Eastern European recipes that were brought over to the U.S. So knishes, pastrami, matzah ball soup. And those are typical Jewish recipes, and they're wonderful and they're lovely. But kosher, as I explained before, just means that it's a set of laws that we have to follow in our cooking and in our eating. So you could basically, as long as you follow those rules, you can cook anything with them. And there are so many kosher products available. You know, I'm sure people don't notice, but most of the products they have in their pantry are certified kosher without knowing it. So soy sauce, fish sauce, spices, if you want to get great Indian spices, most of these are kosher, so there's no reason that you can't cook with these flavors. And I feel that I've been so lucky to be able to travel to different places and eat different foods and experience different cuisines. I have friends who are amazing cooks from different parts of the world, and I like to go back home and experiment and try to repeat these things just doing it my way.
And you've obviously brought them to the new book. I want to touch on something you just mentioned about the items in the pantry being kosher and kind of like either not even knowing it or just everyday ingredients people already use. Is kosher, keeping kosher kind of just a home cooking kind of thing? Or, you know, I know you'll see at certain stores there'll be a kosher section, or like they'll have the little kosher symbol on the package, but it's not like when you go to a restaurant and you're like, oh, you have a gluten-free menu, like, do you have a kosher menu? Like, how does that work outside of the home?
So that's really interesting, and that's a great question, because the thing that I didn't mention before with that, another part of it is that the dishes and the pots have to be separate. Mm. So in order to be kosher, I have to cook in a kosher pot and on kosher dishes and use kosher knives, which means that I have pots for my dairy dishes and I have pots for my meat dishes, and the same with the plates and the utensils and all of those things. So there certainly is such a thing as kosher style. You know, people can go to a restaurant and say, can you, you know, I know a lot of friends who are kosher, but not strictly kosher, and they'll eat in restaurants, and they'll go to a sushi restaurant. And here in New York, you can just say, oh, just bring me a couple of kosher rolls. And sometimes they get it. You know, they know what that means. They know that that means no shellfish in the rolls. But there are so many different levels. Like with any religion, there are different levels of observance, and there are different, you know, everybody does it their own way.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the your friends who come over who don't keep kosher, but, you know, they eat the kosher food and it's, you know, it's no big deal. Do people who aren't Jewish keep kosher just out of a personal decision?
I have yet to meet one.
Okay. I was just wondering. And you mentioned earlier, you touched on coconut oil. And something that I really get a sense of from your cookbook and from my experience with kosher cooking is the health aspect to it. It seems like a very healthy cuisine. There is meat, but, you know, there's also a lot of vegetarianism going on in the kosher space, I feel like. So maybe you could discuss that a little bit.
Well, so I think originally when these guidelines were created, I think it was for a health reason. And then I think over time, so many imitations and substitutes were created that the kosher cuisine sort of went the other direction, where there was tons of sugar, you know, meats. We like kosher cuisine called for a lot of like sweet and sour and sweet meat dishes. And so you would have brisket with tons of sugar and honey and margarine. But I think nowadays, just because people are more educated and there's a whole new health movement that's come into place, that it's taken a shift once again, and kosher cuisine is becoming healthier than ever.
Mm-hmm. And we know that cuisines change over time, and you just mentioned kind of some of the fluxes that it's gone through. But have there been any other, changes or adaptations in the past? Because the law is the law as far as it's, you know, based on religious doctrine. But have there been allowances or exceptions in the past that have changed throughout history?
I don't think there have been allowances, but what I do think has happened over time is, like, for example, now there are great places to get, like, organic kosher meats and chicken, and these companies are taking risks, and they're also making, like, fake bacon products. Or last Friday night, I had 40 people over for dinner, and I went to a kosher butcher who is now specializing in cured meats, and I had kosher brazola, kosher prosciutto. Of course, it's not pork, but it's, you know, they're curing the meats and they're trying to copy these styles and doing it along kosher guidelines, and they're creating amazing products as a result.
That's really interesting. All right, well, let's pause there. We're going to take a quick break, but stay with us. When we come back, we'll be continuing our conversation with Kim Kushner about her new book, The New Kosher.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. You know, there's no more telling aspect, no more revealing virtue of a group of people having evolved in a lovely way than how they feed themselves, how they entertain, how they put food on the table, what they put on the table. Heritage Radio Network provides the clearest evidence that there's hope for us yet. Heritage Radio's like Fairway Market in that we both care deeply about what you're having for dinner tonight. Heritage Radio Network is not just about food, though. Every time I tune in, I learn something about things other than food, too. Architecture, design, stuff like that. But from where I stand, I still say, if you can't eat it, what's the point? For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
You still paying attention? Are you there? Hello, 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 hello. I'm talking to you. Hi. Hey, this is Jack Inslee. I'm the executive producer here at Heritage Radio Network. I've been here at the station since 2009, and I cannot believe just how much this network has grown over that time. We've been able to grow because of donations from people like you. So if you're enjoying this, if you laughed, if you learned something, contribute anything. $1, $2, $10, $100, $1,000, anything counts. And trust me, we'll appreciate seeing your name come through on the donations. So consider visiting heritageradionetwork.org. Click on that little beating heart, the donate button, and show us you care. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you're listening to Native on Heritage Radio. And today I'm talking to Kim Kushner about her latest book, The New Kosher. So, Kim, I wanted to look more at the book, and I'm flipping through, and I get the sense that there are a lot of old standby recipes, but then there's always these little twists that you've added in. So I kind of wanted to talk about your creative process and how you go through kind of this. I'm sure there's like a trial and error aspect, or maybe your family is nice enough to volunteer as your guinea pigs, but like, how do you come up with your recipes?
So it's actually interesting because, and this is the same with my first cookbook, The Modern Menu, it's sort of worked backwards. It's not that I had this idea, okay, I'm going to put out a new cookbook, let me come up with a recipe. I'm cooking all the time. I'm hosting people all the time. I love it. For me, it's therapeutic. I love doing it. I'm one of those people. And these recipes, just over time, I'll try them. Maybe I'll read a magazine, or I read tons of cookbooks, or I'll eat in a restaurant, and I'll come home and I'll try to copy it and make it my own. And I'll just test it and tweak it and see what it needs. Or I'll have friends over and I'll get their opinions or my family's opinions. And then I just have these recipes in my repertoire that I make. And so the recipes were not created for the book, but the book was created for these recipes, which I had and have been making for so long and for so many years.
And let's talk about kind of sort of seasonality. Right now we're kind of, you know, fall, winter. You mentioned the butternut squash chips, which sound delicious. So maybe you can pull out some of your favorite recipes for this time of year that you're excited about.
Absolutely. So the one you just mentioned is great. I don't know why, but the fall for me is like dip season. So I love the homemade pita chips with the za'atar, and then I have a 5-minute quick sun-dried tomato hummus. I also love soups, and there's a great soup section in the book, and there's a great lentil soup that has like lemon slices in it. So I love that mix of the lentil soup with the lemons and some chopped up kale in it, which I think is really delicious. And then for salads, because citrus are so in season right now, there's some delicious salads I love. There's a pomelo salad, which is actually on the cover of the book. It's a pomelo salad, which is a pomelo, for those who don't know, is a citrus fruit similar to a grapefruit, but a little sweeter, and it's really delicious, and it's in peak season right now. And I create a salad with red onion, mint, cilantro, and some spicy arugula. It's really delicious. I love that. And then just some one-pot chicken dishes. So I have a chicken recipe that's called Sticky Chicky. That's chicken and potatoes, all caramelized and gooey and delicious, and you just make it in a dish and serve it in a dish, and it's just easy and quick and so, so good.
Well, and I think everything you just touched on goes right back to that, like, nutrition kind of health aspect between all the vegetables and the soups and the lentils and, you know, those one-pot dishes where you kind of just throw in all the veggies, too. It sounds delicious. As we move into the fall and winter season, of course, we're talking a lot about holiday cooking right now. So what will be on your Thanksgiving or Hanukkah table this season?
Okay, well, so I love making the butternut squash chips, and I make like a whole big, huge basket of that Thanksgiving time. As well as I love serving pomegranate seeds this time of year. So there's a delicious cucumber, pomegranate, and corn salad, which is a great crowd pleaser. The kids love it. The adults love it. It's really, really great. I also have a delicious recipe for a slow-cooked chicken with fennel and white wine. And I just think that the fennel is so good for this season. For Hanukkah, definitely the quick and easy latkes, which are my go-to latke recipe, and I have all different topping ideas, which is just great and delicious. And I also have a really simple recipe for crispy shaved Brussels sprouts. There's just 4 ingredients in the recipe, Brussels sprouts, scallions, and I shave them. And the key is that I bake them on a baking sheet in one layer, so they really crisp up, and everybody goes wild for them because they're like chips. So really, really delicious.
Sounds like everyone is well fed at your house.
Yes, everyone and the neighbors and everyone in the neighborhood is is very happy.
Well, you touched on something. You mentioned, you know, the kids love some of these recipes. How is it for kids who grow up both at in a kosher home, but maybe also go out into the world and see, I don't know, candies or treats or, you know, they go to school? Like, how is that for a child, that experience? What do you think?
So, you know what? I'm raising my children that way, and I was raised that way. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think it's great because it's sort of like they're, I have to say no to them for certain things, and I don't really have a good reason other than, you know, we just can't, you know, you can't have that candy because it's not kosher, and we just don't eat non-kosher. And I think especially raising kids in this day and age, it's so good and it's so important to have boundaries where they learn that you can have everything you want, and I don't have a reason that you might really understand, but it just is. And I think that these restrictions create really good character, and these limitations are important for children to have. So it's good that I say to them, you know, you can't, and you can. And you know what? They don't, they argue with me on a lot of things, trust me. But when I say, you know, you can't have that, they just know, and they're okay with it.
Interesting. Well, I want to touch on another point that you brought up when you were going through all of your great recipes is the latkes. So I love how there's so many words in your book, like quick, easy, fast, even lazy. You know, these are really approachable recipes. And I love latkes, and I cannot quite master the dish. They always turn out to be a little bit like too wet. And I love how you start off the recipe by saying making latkes can be messy, time consuming, and exhausting. And for me, they're very frustrating. So is there a secret that I'm like just missing out on?
I don't think it's a secret. I think it's just the bottom line is it is so messy when you're, you know, grating and there's onions and potatoes and peel in the mix. It's just going to be crazy. And every year I do it, and every year I'm like, no, next year I can buy them just as good. But really, there's nothing like eating that latke hot off the pan. This recipe is my go-to because it all goes into a food processor, so at least it's like contained. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you're frying a huge quantity of stuff, it gets messy. But this is, I think that a good trick with latkes is resisting the urge to turn the oil too hot and keeping it at medium and letting it get hot enough, mm-hmm. but not burning them. Because, you know, you're never making three or four latkes. You're always making a dozen or two dozen or three dozen. So you have to really try to keep that temperature under wraps.
Keep it steady. And if the oil is the right temperature, they cook very quickly, or they should, correct?
Super quickly. Yeah. And I like to just brown them on the outside, and then I turn my oven on to 400 or 375, and I'll stick them in there to finish cooking just for a couple extra minutes.
See, I think that's the step I'm missing. Okay, got it. Oven on. I'm going to try this recipe this weekend, I think.
You should.
And I will let you know how it turns out.
And by the way, you can totally freeze them if you want to keep them for, you know, a week or two.
Yeah, I think when you're making like two or three dozen at a time, it's good to just kind of like, you know, squirrel some away.
Right.
So it doesn't get too messy in my kitchen all the time.
Exactly.
You touched earlier on the challenge of desserts, but I do want to touch on them before we run out of time. You know, just because, again, we're talking about the holiday season and everyone wants, you know, treats and all that kind of stuff. So what are some of your favorite desserts in the book?
So I love making chocolate bark and just flavoring it with all different things. I use rose petals and pistachios. And recently I taught a class, and it was at a school where there was no nuts allowed. So we made the chocolate bark, but instead of using nuts, we used seeds. And I threw in some grape nut cereal for a little additional crunch, and that was great. I also think that desserts, or there are a lot of recipes in this book that can be beautifully gifted for holiday season, and I love making chocolate bark and wrapping it beautifully and gifting it for the holidays. And also, there's nothing like just a great cake. There's a cinnamon chocolate pound cake that's made with Greek yogurt that's delicious. I have my favorite go-to that is 15 minutes is done. It's the giant chocolate chip oatmeal cookie that everybody loves, and it's so easy and it's so good. I actually, what I do for this recipe is I make the chocolate chip oatmeal cookie batter, and I place it into the pan. And if I'm having friends for dinner, I don't bake it until right before dessert, because it just takes about 14 minutes in the oven. So I bake it while my company is over. So the apartment smells amazing, and I take it out of the oven, and it's warm and gooey, and everybody just freaks out over it.
All right. Well, Kim, you mentioned when you're teaching classes. So, I mean, it sounds like you spend a lot of time in the kitchen, but when you're not in the kitchen, what else are you up to?
Okay. Well, believe it or not, when I'm not in the kitchen, I am eating. I eat out a lot, hanging out with friends. I'm lucky that I get to travel. I visit my family a lot in Canada. I'm so involved with my kids' schools and just different communities, nearby community centers. And I'm just a busy mom doing, you know, just day by day.
Any more books in the works?
I'm still enjoying the ride of this one, but hopefully this won't be the last one because I've gotten such an amazing response and feedback. So I think there's definitely more in the future.
And where can people find out more about you?
So you can go on my website, which is kimkushner.com, and the books are available on Amazon, at all bookstores, cooking, specialty food stores, Williams-Sonoma is carrying it. So there's lots of great spots to get it.
And you're on, I'm assuming, Instagram. Your Instagram's always full of yummy-looking
Instagram
things.
Instagram is Kim Kush Cuisine, and Twitter is the same, Kim Kush Cuisine. And I'm always posting pictures of food and classes and inspiration.
Excellent. Well, Kim, thank you so much for sharing your new book with us, The New Kosher. It is available in bookstores and online now, and I really think you should pick it up for a great holiday meal ideas. So thank you, Kim, again, and we look forward to hearing more about you in the future.
Thanks so much.
All right, that's all for Native this week. Thanks to our sponsor, Fairway Markets. Next week, I'll be chatting with Ziad Harmez, owner of Menuchet in New York City, all about his shop and Lebanese culture and cuisine. Be sure to tune in live right here every Thursday morning at 11 a.m.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.